in today's edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy.
For Desmond Mpilo Tutu, it was not enough that he should preach peace. He had to join with the people of this country, and indeed the people of all countries, in working tirelessly and diligently for the attainment of peace.
South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa spoke to the nation regarding the transition of the iconic anti-apartheid freedom fighter and spiritual leader, Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu. For decades, he was the conscience of South Africa, which reflects upon his testament to his faith and spirit of reconciliation in a nation once ruled by the brutal and inhumane South African apartheid regime. We honor our elders and ancestors, Greg Tate, Bell Hooks, Bishop Tutu, Reverend Fanon Vinson, and many others.
One of the things that we all share together, perhaps in this room, is loss.
According to Dr. Manly Domasome, elders are repositories of tribal knowledge and life experience, essential resources for the survival of the village, anchoring it firmly to the living foundation of tradition. The old and the elder are the most revered members of the village community and its greatest preservers and nurturers.
We bear witness as an African people that as our beginning was great and good, so shall our development throughout eternity be. If we dare struggle, speak truth, do justice, walk in the way of rightness.
Our second half of COVID, Race, and Democracy will feature a Kwanzaa message by Dr. Mialona Karinga. This year marks the 55th anniversary of Kwanzaa, founded by Dr. Karinga and the US organization. It began in 1966 as an African-American celebration of life from December 26th to January the 1st. From Pacifica Radio, this is COVID, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and radio affiliates. I'm your host, Akua Holt.
And you saw so many who seemed to be supporting the racist policies of the former government in South Africa. And you say, how are we going to change? Well, I always say to people, remember, the sea is actually made up of drops of water. That what you do where you are is of significance. It may just be that your act of courage encourages someone else who was slightly more apprehensive.
Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu has made his transition at 90. He was the son of a school teacher and domestic worker. When Nelson Mandela became the president of South Africa, Bishop Tutu was appointed as chairman of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission to shed light on the many atrocities committed by the inhumane apartheid government. In 1984, Tutu won the Nobel Peace Prize for his nonviolent opposition to apartheid. In 1986, he became the first Black Archbishop of South Africa. A decade later, the struggle against the South African apartheid regime ended. Music by Ladysmith Black Mambaza, Nkosi Sikelel'i. Bishop Tutu passed on December 26th in Cape Town, South Africa. He was born October 7th, 1931. Bishop Tutu was called a fearless beacon of moral justice, by South Africa's Time magazine. Franklin Augustine Thomas was a businessman and philanthropist who was president and CEO of the Ford Foundation from 1979 until 1996. He was born on May 27, 1934 in Brooklyn, New York. Sadly, he made his transition on December 22, 2021. The Nelson Mandela Foundation of Johannesburg issued a statement regarding the passing of Franklin A. Thomas. "We are deeply saddened to hear of the passing of Franklin A. Thomas. We send our condolences to his family and friends, as well as to the broader Ford Foundation family of which he was a part. He supported anti-apartheid work and developed an association with Nelson Mandela. In 2014, we were honored to host Thomas at the Foundation's newly unveiled Center of Memory and gave him a guided tour of Madiba's private papers, as well as the center's exhibitions, reading room, and dialogue spaces. Thomas will be missed, especially by the many who have benefited from his wisdom and commitment. We have lost a friend." Again, this was a statement issued by the Nelson Mandela Foundation of Johannesburg in honor of Franklin A. Thomas. He was also known as the man who helped facilitate discussions to end apartheid in South Africa. Music by Babatunde Olatunji, Incantations. Dr. Malidoma Patrice Somme, West African elder, author, and teacher, as a representative of his village in Dano, Burkina Faso, came to the West to share the ancient wisdom and practices which have supported his people for thousands of years. He was a scholar, a visionary, shaman, and author of Water and the Spirit, Ritual, Magic, and Initiation in the Life of an African Shaman. Here is Dr. Malidoma Somme.
One of the things that we all share together, perhaps in this room, is loss. It's somehow losing somebody or something always calls attention to this thing in us that may be possessive, wanting to hang on even to something dysfunctional, because at least we know that this is the thing that we have. Good or bad, at least that's mine. And so when that thing is removed, it's almost like it creates an immediate vacuum inside of which breathing becomes very difficult. And so that's what really calls attention to this whole idea of the connection between grief and water. From a tribal perception, water is the element of reconciliation. It is the element of peacemaking, besides being the cleanser and the purifier, which means that every loss produces a crisis that calls for reconciliation. How do I reconcile myself with the loss that I've experienced? And that's the question that have been with me for over a year now. And the amount of grieving I've done, I've not felt enough to actually produce the kind of reconciliation that I thought would be hiding on the other side of it. The good news is it's made it possible for me to function. And that's a good start. But there seemed to be a whole lot more to be done in order to get me to the other side. This is, my case is not an isolated one, that somehow in this room even there are people who share the same experience. And is that the one that I would like to see pioneer or even spearhead the experience with water as an opportunity for some further shedding. And I want to call that a different kind of grieving, getting in touch with water, not as a regular H2O, but as the principal element of our own genesis. I'm just saying that, thinking about the fact that before we arrived here, we were in water for quite a long time, right? The womb is a sea in itself. It's a pool. As we get in touch with that particular kind of energy, the thought here, which I would like to call your attention to, is what is it that water can touch in me, can turn moist, and therefore liquefy, thereby removing from me, so that beyond the idea of the possible cleanliness associated with water, that there be a psychic bath that takes effect at that moment when I enter into contact with water.
Dr. Mali Domasome, sharing Dogara ancestral wisdom on grief. Dr. Mali Domasome held 3 master's degrees and 2 doctorates. His work centered around African spirituality. He made his transition on December 9, 2021. Visit his website to learn more about his work at malidoma.com.
Pass the information, extend the knowledge. Pass the information, extend the knowledge.
John Coltrane said, I love Supreme.
President Cyril Ramaphosa said during an address to his nation that he is deeply disappointed regarding a decision made by several countries to restrict travel from a number of southern African countries over fears about the Omicron variant. He called the restrictions completely unjustified and said the decision to restrict travel was not informed by science and would undermine the ability of countries like his to recover from the pandemic.
And I want to talk about the issue of access to vaccines. We have made a proposal which is supported by more than 100 countries. And what we have said is, we want, and this comes back to what the youth were saying as well, they want to know whether they have a continent which will help to develop their skills, where they can thrive. But what do we want? We want to be able to make our own vaccines. And we will deal with the issue of reluctance for our Africans to take vaccines. But we want to make vaccines. We don't just want to fill and finish and package, which is what we are being offered, that we want you to build a capacity to fill, finish, and package, and we will send you the drug substance. And we say, no, we want you to relax the intellectual property rights for a while, so that we can make the drug substance, because we have the capability. And there are quite a number of countries on the continent that can. And right now, we've got countries like Egypt, Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal, Rwanda, South Africa, and Kenya. Easily, they have the capability, the manufacturing capability. And we are saying, we want to go beyond just getting the substance from Europe or wherever, filling and distributing. We want to make the drug substance, because that is where the intellectual property resides. And that is where we want our young people, who are epidemiologists, who are scientists, to see that there is a future for them. Then they will not go to Europe. They will not go to America. They will stay here, because they will know that they can work effectively and display all the skills we have. Now, what does the world, the northern part of the world do? They say, no, we know what is good for you. We just want you to do fill and finish, and that's it. And we say, no, we no longer want that. You did that long ago when you colonized us, and when you raped and pillaged our countries. We're saying no now. We have the capability, and we want to make all these things ourselves. Now,
Quite often we find that there is a bit of paternalism that underpins the relationship between us. I'll give you a very good example. After Omicron was announced, I was due to travel to West Africa. And in traveling in the wake of Omicron, I received calls from the four presidents that I was going to travel to, President Macky Sall, Buhari, Ouattara, as well as Akufo-Annan. And they said, we've heard about this Omicron. Are you still coming? We want you to come. What can we do to help? And I said, President, if you're still relaxed about our coming, we are coming. A plane load of us, together with journalists, we got on the way. Before I left, I also got some calls from Europe. And the calls were so paternalistic. They were saying, hello, President Ramaphosa. We've heard about this Omicron. I am sorry to tell you that we are banning travel to Europe from South Africa and Southern Africa. No discussion, no attempt to hear what our views are. And I'm saying that the relationship needs to be mutually respectful. We need to respect one another. The African presidents respected me as we respect one another. But from Europe, I just got a message of saying, we've banned travel, thank you, goodbye, see you next time. That's not the way to conduct relationship.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa. The Biden administration will lift the travel ban for 8 African countries that were among the first to report the Omicron variant by December 31st, 2021, according to a senior official. Scholar activist Bell Hooks has published more than 40 books, including Ain't I a Woman, Black Women and Feminism, and All About Love, as well as numerous scholarly articles addressing race, class, gender, art, history, sexuality, media, and feminism. In 2014, she founded the Bell Hooks Institute at Berea College in Berea, Kentucky. Here's Bell Hooks speaking on race and white supremacy.
I began to use the phrase in my work, white supremacist capitalist patriarchy, because I wanted to have some language that would actually remind us continually of the interlocking systems of domination that define our reality, and not to just have one thing be like, you know, gender is the important issue, race is the important issue. But for me, the use of that particular jargonistic phrase was a sort of shortcut way of saying all of these things actually are functioning simultaneously at all times in our lives. And that if I really want to understand what's happening to me right now at this moment in my life as a Black female of a certain age group, I won't be able to understand it if I'm only looking through the lens of race. I won't be able to understand it if I'm only looking through the lens of gender. I won't be able to understand it if I'm only looking at how white people see me. One of the, to me, an important breakthrough I felt in my work and that of others was the call to use the term white supremacy over racism, because racism in and of itself did not really allow for a discourse of colonization and decolonization, the recognition of the internalized racism within people of color. And it was always, in a sense, keeping things at the level at which whiteness and white people remained at the center of the discussion. In my classroom, I might say to students, you know, that when we use the term white supremacy, it doesn't just evoke white people, it evokes a political world that we can all frame ourselves in relationship to. And I think that I was able to do that because I grew up, again, in racial apartheid, where there was a color caste system. So that obviously I knew that through my own experiential reality, you know, that it wasn't just what white people do to black people that was wounding and damaging to our lives. I knew that when we went over to my grandmother's house, who looked white, who lived in a white neighborhood, and she called my sister Blackie because she was dark and her hair was nappy, and my sister would sit in the corner and cry or not want to go over there, I knew that there is some system here that is hurting this little girl, that is not directly the direct hit from the white person. And white supremacy was that term that allowed one to acknowledge our collusion with the forces of racism and imperialism. And so for me, those words were very much about the constant reminder, one, of institutional constructs, that we're not talking about personal constructs in the sense of how do you feel about me as a woman or how do you feel about me as a black person, but they really seem to me to evoke a larger apparatus. And I don't know why those terms have become so mocked by people, because in fact, far from simplifying the issues, I think they actually, when you merge them together, really complicate the questions of freedom and justice globally, because it means then that we have to look at what black people are doing to each other in Rwanda. We have to, and we can't just say racism, what have you. We have to problematize nationalism beyond race in all kinds of ways that I think there's a tremendous reluctance, particularly in the United States, to have a more complex accounting of identity.
Bell Hooks said she was committed to the struggle to end domination in all its forms since she was a teenager. She was born on September 25th, 1952. Hooks made her transition on December 15th, 2021. She was 69 years old. Music by Abby Lincoln, Golden Lady. This is COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'm Akua Holt. Kwanzaa is celebrated around the world, including on the island of Galveston, the birthplace of Juneteenth. Here's the executive director of NEA Cultural Center, Sue Johnson.
NEA Cultural Center was founded back in 1992. It was during a time in our little island community. We're 50 miles south of Houston on Galveston Island. This is the city that many now know is the birthplace of Juneteenth. It is the place where General Gordon Granger read General Order Number 3 that supposedly freed the enslaved 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation and 2 years after we were supposed to be free. It's also the home of many firsts, the first African Methodist Episcopal Church, first Black Catholic Church, the first Black Baptist Church, and many other firsts. Jack Johnson hailed from our little island. All of that history was almost lost because during that time there was revitalization of Galveston's history. There was a preservation movement afoot that preserved his story. At the same time, many of our monuments of history were being demolished. We had to find ways to preserve what we had left in terms of memories and stories. NEA Cultural Center formed primarily in order to help to lift the esteem of African Americans in Galveston while we celebrated, discovered, and told our story. Since then, we have embarked on many programs leaning on my brothers and sisters from the North in Houston, Texas, Sister Akua, Brother Deloitte Parker, where I celebrated my very first Kwanzaa at the SHAPE Community Center, Fifth Ward Multipurpose Center, and many of my friends and colleagues that helped to uplift and bring culture to our island. Even though we're culturally rich, we did suffer and do suffer from cultural amnesia. And it was with the Mandela Productions and Three Sisters in the Spirit and many of our friends and colleagues from north of us in San Antonio, Texas, with our Organization for Black Unity, that we were able to bring cultural programming to Galveston. And we embarked on a 7-state tour with the SHAPE Community Center for 15 years to introduce our children to the civil rights struggle and those who participated in it, traveled to Africa, to Senegal and the Gambia. Since then, we've done more long-term programming, such as the Children's Defense Fund Freedom School, where our children have become more literate, they read more, they love reading more, and we have been able to reduce the summer learning loss that's traditional during summer months. For the last 15 years, we have engaged college interns who facilitate classes with young people. We focus on not only literacy, but social action, advocacy, conflict resolution, and a strong piece on parent engagement.
Excellent. This is Sister Sue Johnson, the founder of NEA Cultural Center on the island of Galveston. I'm Akua Holt, and we want to fill you in about what's happening down south, the Dirty South, with regard to Kwanzaa throughout the Gulf Coast. Tell us about your Kwanzaa plans for this year.
We start with the Umoja celebration in conjunction with the Greater Houston Kwanzaa Planning Committee. We join with all of our sister organizations and brother organizations throughout the region to celebrate Umoja. We'll be at the SHAPE Center on Alameda in Houston. We'll be bringing our tribe, our delegation, to participate in the Umoja celebration with many other organizations on the first night of Kwanzaa. The next day, we will have Children's Kwanzaa at our Wright CUNY Parks and Rec Center here in Galveston with youth, and we'll engage them in activities to help them to become more aware of what Kwanzaa is. And then we will have the next day with the Coalition of Urban Resource Experts. We'll come to Galveston and work with Black community leaders to have emancipation power circles, where we will begin to look at our community and look at our relations and begin to start healing so that we can coalesce and address issues in the community using the process of the Coalition of Urban Resource Experts and emancipation healing circles. Then we will do several virtual events that celebrate our ancestors, that focus on our village keepers, those people in our community who have made a difference in our community, who have toiled, and with a special focus on improving quality of life for African people in Galveston, Texas, and throughout the diaspora. We will do several events that embark upon what Kwanzaa is and how it's exemplified in our community. and kind of just bring in our harvest.
Well, it sounds like you guys have really put in the work with putting Kwanzaa into practice beyond calling out what the symbols are and what the various principles mean. We've done a lot of work on the Gulf Coast, moving the principles and the understanding and the theory of Kwanzaa, putting it into action. And that's what Shape Center has been all about. And I'm sure Deloitte is going to be a part of this conversation on a national level. And many of the entities that are involved in this effort of bringing Kwanzaa to the world via Zoom this year, because we don't know what's happening with the pandemic, and we continue moving forward.
NEO Cultural Center's major live celebration of Kwanzaa will be December 30th at the Old Central Cultural Center, the site of the first Black high school in the state of Texas. And we will then have our sister, Cleo Johnson, who is the director of the Black United Fund of Texas. As our keynote speaker, the master drummer, brother said, African dancers and youth and other community members doing edutainment.
How can we follow you? Will this event be live online?
www.niacultural.org. And that's to be determined. Still hoping and praying that we can be live and that this COVID variant doesn't put us in a place where we have to just be virtual, but we're ready either way.
You're listening to Sue Johnson, founder, executive director of the NEO Cultural Center on the island of Galveston.
Umoja, unity that brings us together. Umoja, unity that brings us together. Umoja, unity that brings us together.
Sweet Honey in the Rock, Seven Principles. Kwanzaa celebrates family, community, and culture from December 26th through January the 1st. It was created in 1966 by Dr. Maulana Karinga based on harvest festival traditions from the African diaspora. Buki Nyerere of the National Association of Kawaida Organizations has been teaching the principles of Kwanzaa for several decades. He reflects on the history of Nako and Kwanzaa. Bukim Nyerere.
Well, I'm an advocate of Kawaida. I was reading Dr. Maulana Karinga. It was a magazine. It was called Black Scholar. And I read some of his articles, and I found out that he was saying what I was thinking. And the articulation of it was the way I wish I could talk at a African history scholars meeting in Chicago. I got to see him and I was more enthralled. When I got back to New York, some of us who knew each other as activists had meetings over a period of 2 years. And then out of that came the National Association of Kawaiida Organizations in different parts that would study Kawaiida, the philosophy, which means Kawaiida being a synthesis word, simply meaning the best of African tradition and reason. We formulated a group since 1988. We've been together. We've become clearer on different issues that we all supported and would give a national outreach to. In 1966, Dr. Karenga created Kwanzaa, and it has grown steadily. And it's grown nationally and internationally as a practice to observe, one, that which would bring us together and a spirit in which we could celebrate our Africanness. The fact that there was a need to address our culture, how that would relate to how we deal with the world and our historic issues with our oppression.
Talk to us about some of the activities you guys have been engaged in over the years.
We brought in scholars. We do programs that cover the political spectrum, whether that's international or national, to bring more clarity and support, a way of defining how we see things philosophically. And one of the reasons is people may challenge what you're thinking. You begin to strengthen yourself by knowing why you practice a certain way of life, because nobody challenges why people support Hanukkah or Cinco de Mayo. Nobody challenges those practices from those that embrace that thinking. They want you to explain why you would be so focused on keeping your identity, seeking out the knowledge of yourself from a lost memory.
I remember at the time, maybe mid-90s, there was a lot of discussion and debate, was Kwanzaa to replace Christmas? What's your response?
Well, one thing is that we live in a Christian culture, and regardless of whether you practice Islam, whether you are a Christian, whether you are Jewish or Baha'i or Mahatian, in our sacred passage, this is a cultural holiday in which we come together to reflect and project on our Africanness. So it's cultural, it has nothing to do with religion. There are certain rituals that are founded even in the seven principles of the Nguza Saba, like as such as when one celebrates Umoja, unity, Kujichagulia, self-determination, or go to the last principle, which is faith. These are just an ingathering of thought and practice that comes out of guidelines. What do you accept? Your behavior, not only from your own thinking, but how you interact with other people.
Here we are in the era of many pandemics, reckoning with racial justice, dealing with the impact of COVID, with African-American communities suffering at alarming rates. How can one still embrace these principles and strengthen our community?
That last principle in the Nguza Saba, which is faith, you fight for that just like you fight for the ability to unify. It starts by your faith that how you've lived this life has a lot of history to it, has the past, the loss of memory.
When they argue why Kwanzaa over all the others, and I heard some scholars debate this issue and say every single holiday we celebrate, they're man-made holidays, every single one.
One needs to understand, but what we've done as a creative people is always take on whatever practice is going down and made this just a day of where a family gathering. Also recognize that most thoughts come out of one human to another. The divinity process, we would have to have a more open debate about that. All holidays are created by man.
Thank you very much for being with us.
And okay.
State with us the name of your...
My name is Bokim Nyerere. I'm from the New York chapter of the National Association of Kawaiida Organizations. The website is www.iaafestival.org.
That was Bokim Nyerere of the National Association of Kawaiida Organizations, NACO.
Habarigani, habarigani, Kwanzaa. Happy Kwanzaa.
feel the joy as we sing of the love togetherness can surely bring emotion. Set the table, no matter strong, thankful for the first fruits of the year. This day I light a candle just for you. Come join the party, it's a celebration. Karamu at Kwanzaa time of year. Red and yellow, black or white, your road is alright. It's a celebration that should last throughout the year. Happy Kwanzaa.
Happy Kwanzaa.
All right. Together there is so much we can do.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Happy Kwanzaa, Teddy Pendergrass. As an African-American and Pan-African holiday celebrated by millions worldwide, Dr. Maiolana Karenga says Kwanzaa brings a cultural message which speaks to the best of what it means to be African and human in the fullest sense. Dr. Maiolana Karenga.
Kwa niaba ya jumuiya yetu, yani us, na watetezi wake, tunasema habari gani, karibuni ndugu na dada, rafiki na wageni. Miongoni mwetu siku zote mtakuta jamaa yenu na mahali pa amani. Na tunawatakia baraka bila idadi na vitu vyote vizuri bila mwisho. That is to say, on behalf of our organization, huh? And as advocates, we say greetings and welcome, brothers and sisters, friends and guests. Among us, you will always find your family in a peaceful place, and we wish for you blessings without number and all good things without end. Moreover, we bear witness as an African people that as our beginning was great and good, so shall our development to our eternity be, if we dare struggle, speak truth, do justice, and walk in the way of righteousness. Hotep, Ashe, Hedi. And how do we as a people honor our role as a moral and social vanguard, not only in this country, but indeed in the world? In a word, what are our obligations to ourselves and others, to the poor and the less powerful, to the vulnerable, to the oppressed, to the suffering and struggling peoples of the world, and to the well-being of the world itself? Constantly following in the culture footsteps of our ancestors and elders, we come together also to celebrate the good in the world, I repeat, the good in the world, the good of family, of community and culture, the good of loving kindness and care, the good of respect for ourselves and others, the good of life and love, of sharing and togetherness, the good of working to build and sustain the good world we all want and deserve to live in and leave as a legacy to those who come after us. Kwanzaa is above all a celebration of African people, right? It's very important for us to understand that Kwanzaa is above all a celebration of African people, a celebration of their lives, their culture, their historic initiatives, and the awesome march and movement we make to history. Indeed, on one level, it's also a celebration of our people in struggle, who have created a culture and history of struggle to free themselves and to be themselves and to bring an increased good in the world. Kwanzaa is an act of freedom, a liberating return to our own history, not requesting approval for our return or recognition of our holiday. It is an act of freedom against the culture imperialism of the dominant society, which sought to strip us of our African culture and make them darker images, make us darker images of themselves. It is an instrument of freedom, a means of building a culture of resistance. Kwanzaa was conceived as an instrument of struggle to raise and cultivate the consciousness of the people, to unite them around principles that anchored and elevated their lives and involved them in the struggle to be themselves and free themselves and build a just and good world we all want, work for, and deserve. It's an act of freedom, it's an instrument of freedom, and it's a celebration of freedom, a freeing of ourselves and being ourselves in radical rupture. It is a celebration of our culture, our history, and our humanity, and our awesome march and movement through time and space in the world. And we know that if we are to honor and achieve the task assigned us, by both history and heaven, we must embrace principles and engage in practices which enable us to complete them. And at the heart of those principles are the Nguzo Saba, the seven principles of Kwanzaa and of Kawaida philosophy, from which both the Nguzo Saba and Kwanzaa are created. I created and offered the Nguzo Saba as principles and practices central to the liberation and bringing good in the world in 1965. These are essential ethical values, my people, and principles of life and living. And those principles are Umoja, unity; Kujichagulia, self-determination; Ujima, collective working responsibility; Ujamaa, cooperative economics; Nia, purpose; Kuumba, creativity; and Imani, faith. Kwanzaa, through its rootedness in Kawaida philosophy, and then Nguzo Saba, like all significant messages and events, has both a particular and universal message and meaning. Like the great faith traditions of the world, it speaks first to the particular people who crafted it out of their own lives, out of their own lived experience and deep thought, and in its ability to speak to the best of what it means to be African and human in the fullest sense. Kwanzaa also carries a message for the world, and this message is clear and compelling in the Nguzo Saba. And certainly one of the most significant ways to raise up and reaffirm the Nguzo Saba is through the Kwanzaa Candle Lighting Ceremony. This ceremony, called Lifting of the Light at Last, reflects the Sabaic teaching found in the Hosea of ancient Egypt, the sacred text of ancient Egypt, that says, "We as a people are," quote, "given that which endures in the midst of that which is overthrown," unquote. And that this enduring legacy is our spiritual and ethical values. And so at Kwanzaa, we lift up these lasting values which light the path to bringing good in the world.
Kwanzaa's 2021 theme is Practicing Kwanzaa and the Seven Principles, Ensuring the Well-Being of the World. Visit the official Kwanzaa website for accurate and more information on the origins, concepts, values, symbols, and practice of Kwanzaa. Thanks to Ujima Pan-African Media Archives for sharing this content. Official Kwanzaa website.org. Brother Greg Tate, innovative cultural critic, writer, musician, and co-founder of the Black Rock Coalition, also made his transition at 64. He was an African-American jolly, an observer of spirit, life and its African rhythms that flow through everything, including poetry, music, language, and art. He was a seer who understood the moment and the importance of documenting hip-hop before anyone overstood it was an art force to be respected. In the late 90s, Tate co-founded Burnt Sugar with Jared Nickerson and produced 16 albums. Check out Greg Tate reading an excerpt of Neo Hoodoo and Bebop Ghost and What Is Hip-Hop, recorded in 1996.
Today I need to speak first on Sun Ra, who posed questions fundamental to the riddle of black ontologies, bleak and blue musicologies, oblique and interstellar strategies, dark matters, and those even darker gravity-repulsing universe-expanding energies. I especially need to address the Ra who rhetorically asked, "If you're not a reality, whose myth are you? And if you're not a myth, then whose reality are you?" Sun Ra actually refused to recognize a difference between the two, which is why he designated his band a Myth Science Orchestra, a V-Rocket Engineering Territory band in the boat of Ra. Like Thornton Dow, Ra knew his unlimited energy fields of ultraviolet, psionic, and telemetric vision were as real as the trouble we seen. Like blackface minstrelsy's greatest frontman, Burt Williams, who could outdress and out-philosophize Cornel West when he wasn't sporting cork grease and mesmerizing fools with mute elegance on Broadway. Like that Williams, Sun Ra believed the American Negro was masterful at pretending to be nobody and at playing dead. The same son of Birmingham, Alabama, the former Herman Poole Blount, rechristened himself Sun Ra, a.k.a. Le Soni Ra, when he began a long career as a pre-Egyptian extraterrestrial big band leader from Saturn. The same Sun Ra also addressed another fundamental mystery of Black existence when he composed pieces such as My Brother the Wind and Astro Blacks and The Nubians of Plutonia and Odes to Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars. If you're not a reality, then whose myth are you? In whose light do you shine, your own or some other mother's blood-stained son? Sun Ra once surrounded his visage with a historical constellation of stargazing cosmologists whose ranks included Copernicus, Galileo, Tycho Brahe, Leonardo da Vinci. You can see this imagery on an ESP album of Ra's called The Heliocentric Worlds of Sun Ra. For as long as my people have been shackled to this land, they have refused to believe that a captive body automatically and autonomically meant one had to have a captive imagination, or that to be treated like a beast of burden was to be unburdened with intellectual, poetic, visual, musical, military, and ethical impulses. This notion that just because some psychotic group or group of madmen imagines an African man or woman to be a mule or a hoe or a plow doesn't mean that that African man or woman can't think or act in terms of metaphor, metamorphosis, and metempsychosis. What you call graffiti, Ramel Z called iconoclast panzerism, the armoring of the alpha beta against the distorted trichnology of biologically diseased organisms in the mold of the 14th century Gothic monks who made lettering so dense the Catholic Church had to shut them down for daring to make the icon signify louder than the Pope. PLO style, Buddha monks with the ow yow. Even under the whip or in the train yards, my people always knew there was more than one way to change into a cat or moonwalk like an Egyptian. Hellhounds on the trailways, Miles runs the voodoo down homes where the hatred is illmatic, ready to dyed in the wool, a scanner darkly, a real dyed in the wool, scanner darkly, where the rubber meets the road and Philip K. Dick freestyling on the wings of song to the beat of a difference engine named Thornton Dial. But I also need to address County Cullen today. I really, really need to recite from the book of County Cullen, reiterate those elemental questions he posed to the boogie's deepest, darkest existential dilemmas when he pondered, what is Africa to me? Copper sun or scarlet sea? Jungle star or jungle track? Strong bronze men or regal black? Women from whose loins I sprang when the birds of Eden sang? One 3 centuries removed from the scenes his fathers loved, spicy grove, cinnamon tree. What is Africa to me?
Get ready!
Hip-hop is how we rip off the band-aids, pour saltpeter on the wounds. Hip-hop is Ralph Ellison, who once said the blues is like running a razor blade along an open sore. If it wasn't for bad English and hip-hop, I wouldn't have no blues at all. See, hip-hop is my black cat moan. Hip-hop is my black cat scan. Hip-hop is I need to stop. It's time for my medicine. Time to face the music again. Buddha blessed, booyah blasted. These are the words that she manifested.
Greg Tate's legacy will live on. His family released a statement calling him a gentle giant of black radical thought and creativity, stating he was an invaluable friend and a generous mentor to many. Greg Tate passed on December 7, 2021 in New York City. He was born October 14, 1957 in Dayton, Ohio. The Pacifica National Board voted unanimously to develop a transformative program that bridged voices of the people throughout the network, highlighting the enormous scale and life-altering challenges we face in the midst of 2 horrific pandemics. We have worked tirelessly to accomplish that goal, and with your support, the COVID Race and Democracy production team will continue to lift the voices of the people. As we close 2021, we thank you for your support. That concludes today's edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and its radio affiliates who contributed to the production of this show. Today's program was produced by yours truly, Akua Holt, and edited by myself and senior editor Paulina Vasiliev. Akua Holt, Paulina Vasiliev, and Steve Zeltzer are the executive producers of COVID Race and Democracy. You can find this in all previous episodes online at covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button. You can follow us on Twitter at PacificaCRD and on Facebook at COVID Race and Democracy. Special birthday shout out to a longtime volunteer and supporter, Sister Fahima. This program is dedicated in honor of another longtime volunteer who's now an ancestor, Baba Fana Vinton of KPFT Houston. Thanks for listening. We leave you with this quote by Desmond Tutu. If you are neutral in the situation of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor.